We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
1, 2, 3.
Listen.
So we're here with Coach Jesse Miller of BTB Lax. Jesse, you know, we had a great Final Four weekend this last week. Good lacrosse being played. And so we'd like to thanks for being on our last podcast of the season covering the NCAA.
Yeah, sounds great. Excited to talk about the games.
Yeah, so Yale-Albany, was one of the semifinal matchups. This was kind of a result I don't really think anyone really saw coming. Albany just got decimated early. What happened? What happened to Albany?
Albany won the first faceoff of the game, but then they quickly turned it over. Yale proceeded to score the first 7 goals of the game. If you think back, actually, we talked about the Yale-Albany game back during the regular season, and Yale dominated that game as well. That game, everybody kind of thought that it might have had a lot to do with the injury for Albany. But all in all, they just jumped on them early, and they got the first goal by the midi, Danagelis, who's just a junior, really solid player. Jackson Morrill, their sophomore from McDonough, attackman, played really well. He had their second goal. Reeves had their third goal. Matt Gaudette had the fourth goal, and that was the first of his 6 goals that he would have in the game. So, they just got off to a 7-0 lead before Albany could even blink. So it was pretty crazy. And then the other thing, too, is Carl Russo, Albany's goalie, who's an All-American, didn't make a save at all for a long period of time, and to the point where they actually pulled him. They eventually put him back in, but that's got to be a major, major confidence blow to an All-American goalie who's having a great season to just get absolutely shelled. I don't think anybody expected that to be, especially it was 7-1 at the end of the first quarter, so just pretty crazy.
Yeah, so do you think that, so this was Albany's first trip to the Final Four, I believe, in NCAA history. Do you think inexperience could have played a factor in this matchup for Albany?
Not any more than Yale. Yale, their last trip to the Final Four was, 1990, so I don't think they've had real tight games in years prior in the playoffs, but I don't think they've gotten out of the first round other than this year. So I think that they are both kind of on the same, you look at the other game, the Duke-Maryland game, where those two teams are in it pretty much all the time. But these two teams, Yale and Albany, I think they were both inexperienced in terms of playing on championship weekend. So I don't think that had any more of an effect on Albany than it did Yale. It just comes down to how execution at that point, which Yale obviously did a very, very good job of.
Yeah, so, another thing. So Connor Fields, he was able to play in this game. Head coach Scott Marr came out and said after their loss that Fields had actually played on a misdiagnosed torn ACL for the last about year and a half, 2 years. How does that make what he has accomplished even more impressive than what we originally thought?
They said that, and I didn't hear that. So they said that he had a torn ACL for a year and a half?
Yeah, I believe I saw a statement, on the Albany website, or I believe it was.
I know that Fields and Coach Marr have a really, really strong relationship. I'm sure the guy's tough as nails. He had an unbelievable career and scored a ton of goals. Yale was able to, Yale's defense just was smothering the Albany attack to the point where it's pretty amazing how things can change week to week, especially in the tournaments from the opening round where Albany was on fire, scoring at will over Richmond, to playing really well over Denver, who has a lot of experience, and then they just get shut down by Yale. It's, I still think that if the Final Four, it's tough to say. I was kind of thinking this a little bit. If they, I guess you can say this every single year, but if they played the Final Four again, I mean, going into the Final Four, I honestly thought that any team had, if they could get the momentum, could potentially win it. But Yale just was, they were on fire from, you know, in both games. And it was just, every time they needed an answer, every time they needed a goal, they got it. And it was really, really, really impressive. And then there was also times, you know, throughout the weekend where they would need to just possess the ball, and they just did a great job of possessing the ball. So just to get back to your question about Fields' knee injury, that's, it seems to me that if he had a torn ACL for a year and a half, that might, I would see, that would seem, it seemed kind of odd how that would be misdiagnosed for a year and a half if you couldn't run and stuff. I'm not sure he was practicing and stuff, but I know for a fact that I thought you were probably going to say he had a torn MCL or something like that, which isn't as extreme. Is he getting surgery now, and is he not going to play in the MLL for this summer?
I haven't heard. Yeah, I don't know about that.
So we'll know soon enough whether he has a torn ACL or not, whether he plays in the MLL this summer. So if he's playing, I don't think he has a torn ACL if he's not playing. Well, with that being said, I don't think he was 100%, but injuries are part of the game, and it's not, you know, it wasn't, yeah, it was just being playing against the cards they were dealt, so.
Sure. Hey, so let me ask you this. Do you think Albany would have been moving on to championship weekend if Fields was 100, or moving on to the championship game if Fields was at 100%?
No.
Why do you think that?
Not the way that Yale played. I mean, Yale was just, they were getting, they had six guys like throughout the weekend who were stepping up. Not to mention the best player out of everybody was on Yale's team in terms of Reeves. So they had Dana Jealous, they had Gaudette, they had Morrell. I mean, if you look at just alone in the Yale-Albany game, Reeves, Gaudette, and Morrell combined for, Justin Morrell combined for 23 points. That's just three guys. Granted, and then, I mean, they put up 20 goals. Their first-line midfielder, every single guy could score. I mean, they just, not to mention their defense was, you know, smothering. Their goalie, Jack Starr, was playing really well as a freshman. Connor Mackey was tearing it up. Then he really hurt his arm in the second quarter of that Yale-Albany game and proceeded to play hurt the rest of the tournament weekend and still grinded it out. So I don't think that that one guy, you know, would have necessarily changed that. I mean, Yale was playing great. I mean, I don't know if we combine the two scores of Yale versus Albany, Yale outscored them by pretty much 10 the second time around and around 8 the first time around. So they outscored them by 18 goals. Is a healthy Fields going to score 18 goals? I don't think so. You know,
yeah.
So that's just my opinion.
Yeah. Hey, so second semifinal game, we had Maryland versus Duke. You know, watching this one early, you know, it looked like it was going to be another blowout, but, you know, Maryland was able to bring it within one, you know, later in the game, in the second half. Let's talk a little bit about that matchup.
Yeah, it's kind of weird how I thought both these games were going to be real close. Just goes to show you, you can never really predict what's going to happen. But so the seniors on Maryland had played in three championship games previous. So their freshman, sophomore, and junior years, they played in the championship game. They got down quick. I mean, they were trailing 4-0 after the first quarter. Basically, they just kind of got out to that sluggish start that we saw them do against Robert Morris in the first round. And they were just getting outplayed basically in every facet of the game initially there. And just Maryland just looked really out of sorts, which was kind of odd seeing how much experience they have and how well they're coached. But the other thing, too, is Montgomery, the freshman midfielder for Duke, came out firing. I think it was his 19th birthday that day. He ended up with 3 goals in the first half. So they ended up going down 6-0. And then Connor Kelly didn't even have a shot in the game until 18 minutes into the game, which is pretty insane. And they finally get on the board with a Bernhardt goal to make it 6-1. They get make it 6-2, but then Montgomery gets another, makes it 7-2. At halftime, it was 8-5, and Tillman just, you know, talked about at the halftime how it'd be good to have a little time to regroup, get our guys back on the same page, and, you know, get organized again. But the other thing, too, that I think I've heard, you know, the announcers were talking about it a lot. Some of my friends who are Maryland alums that played there were talking about it a lot. You didn't really notice it until push comes to shove, but Maryland just doesn't play that many guys where Duke plays a lot more guys. So Duke was just, Maryland was tired. Carcaterra was on the sideline in the box, you know, observing from that angle, so you kind of hear him chime in multiple times and just explaining how exhausted the Maryland players were looking, and it just really wore them down, not to mention it was 90 degrees or something like that up in Foxborough, so it just kind of really, really hurt them, and then they also just couldn't find a net with a lot of their shots. They just couldn't create any space. Duke's defense was playing well, and you know, they were combining that by scoring really when they needed to score. So, and then like every game, a few little things really shifted the momentum or kept it going the same way that just allowed Duke to, you know, may keep their lead. They never trailed in the entire game. So they got to 8-7, but then quickly thereafter. Oh, you know what really, really killed Maryland is they got to 8-7 after a Bubba Fairman goal, and then Shockey wins the ensuing faceoff for a fast break, feeds it to Bernhardt, but Bernhardt dropped it, and it pretty much goes out of bounds and immediately goes the other way, and Duke scores. That connection from Shockey to Bernhardt, we're going to see a million times the next 2 years, because Bernhardt's going to be a junior, Shockey's going to be a sophomore, and I don't see Jared Bernhardt dropping that pass many times, but that was a time where they really needed to catch it, because that's 8-8, Duke's on their heels, and anything can happen, but just seems to happen those ways in the game of lacrosse where a momentum shift like that can just be a dagger, and it just Duke was able to get back to momentum and then eventually build that 8-7 lead to a 12-7 lead into the fourth quarter.
Yeah. So, hey, you mentioned one thing I wanted to touch on. You mentioned Montgomery, you know, having 3 goals, and Robertson, another Duke freshman, had 3 goals and an assist. What can you say about Duke's potential in the upcoming years with their young players?
Well, next Kid Robinson had 47 goals or something like that as a freshman. He's from Charlottesville, Virginia, so just a couple hours away from D.C. where I live. And I mean, they always have really, really good players. But I'll tell you a play that Robertson made that was huge. So I think the two biggest plays, the two biggest daggers for Maryland were that one where Bernhardt dropped the pass from Shockey that potentially would have tied it at 8-8. Then we're into the fourth quarter now. It's 11-7 after a goal by Robinson. And then there's about 7:30 left in the game. Maryland makes a defensive stop. One of their D-middies, Harrison, number 53, picks the ball up. He's got the ball on the stick. And Robinson just hustles. He rides, gets in front of him, checks the ball out of his stick, and they get the ball. Immediately results in a Gunnerdine goal, and that was the icing in the cake. That's what crushed Maryland. I mean, if Maryland can clear the ball, maybe put one in, get it to 11-8, three goals left, 7 minutes, you know, three goals, you know, lacrosse, three goals can be scored like that. As a coach, if I'm up 3-0 or any three-goal lead, I don't feel completely comfortable. But that hustle play by Robinson right there was enormous, and it just put the dagger in Maryland. But no, to answer your question, they have awesome freshmen. There's awesome freshmen across the board, so it would just be, you know, for a lot of the top teams. But, I mean, they have a top recruiting class every year. Their sophomore class is the number one rated class in the country, and their freshman class wasn't too shabby either. Robinson played all year round. I mean, we saw him play a game early in the season, and he had three goals or something, and that was like one of the first times he played in Division I college lacrosse, so no joke.
Yeah.
They lose their goalie, but then they got the guy Upgren who kind of split time with Fowler. Gunnerdine graduates, which is, you know, the all-time leading goal scorer in lacrosse Division I history. But they got plenty of guns coming back. They always reload. And so it'll be interesting. But, I mean, they're in the ACC. Virginia's going to be real good. They have a lot of young talent as well. So I'm sure North Carolina will bounce back. It'll be tough, you know. But they'll be right there in the thick of things for sure.
Yeah. Hey, so moving on, so the championship game, you know, Yale versus Duke, what were your initial thoughts, you know, before heading into that, before watching that matchup?
You know, when I watched Duke play, I basically saw the game twice. When I watched Duke play Maryland, I was surprised with how kind of dominant they looked. Defensively, offensively. Same with Yale. But Duke just had so much experience, you know, being in those games. Danowski is going into the game was 3-1 in championship games. So he has three titles. He's looking for his fourth. It's Yale's first time on the big show. But I mean, when you go down the line and kind of compare the starting lineups and their players and stuff like that, Yale's got plenty of athletes. So I thought going into the game that it was going to be a really good game. And I wanted to be able to win, but I probably had a feeling that Duke would manage to squeak it out. But Yale came up firing. I mean, it really did. So guys just step up for Yale. So I mean, the Duke's defensive game plan was to basically have not slide real slow, if at all, to the Yale middies, and those Yale middies were like, game on, let's go. And Jack Ty leads the game off with a goal, scores another goal, 2-0. That ties one in. So, I mean, their first three possessions of the game, they have three goals. And it was just, you know, basically in that first quarter, too, Yale was continuing to do that 10-man ride. They caused a turnover, so they're up 3-1 after the first quarter. And we can kind of, like, walk through the game after that. But those were my initial thoughts of what was going to happen. But then Yale just took the lead initially and then never relinquished it. It was, I mean, there were some moments in the game where, you know, things could have changed, but Yale always had an answer all weekend. They had an answer for everything. It was actually really, really impressive. They were really well coached, really well prepared, and every one of their contributing players throughout the season stepped up.
Yeah, so you mentioned how all of their Yale's players were able to step up. You know, Gaudette had 4 goals in the championship game, and I think, you know, 10 goals on championship weekend. You know, Ty scored a hat trick. Reeves had, I think, like 3 assists and a goal in the championship game. You know, people have been talking about Ben Reeves and Yale, but I don't think the casual lacrosse fan may have realized how deep Yale was. I think like 6 of their players made the all tournament team. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, the announcers kept on talking about all through the playoffs was how Yale has the most NFL draft picks. They have 6 as well. So they have really good athletic players. They have, just to give you an example, they have Alessi on the wings, who's like one of their all around top middies. He also plays football. He had a huge goal for them in the second half. Joey Sessa really stepped up. There was a situation in the second quarter, late in the second quarter, where, you know, at the start of the second quarter, Yale had a 4-1 lead. They got it to, it was eventually 5-3 Yale. And then 5-4 Yale after Robinson, at that point, scored his 47th goal of the season. And then basically now is like the end of the second quarter. Basically, this play actually, this is another big momentum play in this game. So it's 5-4. Duke got the ball on the ground twice with good defensive checks. But every time it went on the floor, Yale was just tenacious and just like physical, got the ball back up, and eventually they got it a third time, I'm pretty sure. So then Yale called a timeout. So that was like, to give you an equivalent analogy, I mean, you're playing basketball and you just get 2 to 3 rebounds and you just keep on getting shots. I mean, that eventually puts a lot of pressure on the defense, and teams usually score, like when that type of situation happens. And so they come out of the timeout, and Joey Sessa, who is just an athletic, small middy, but strong middy, just comes out with a great dodge and just goes right into it, doesn't afraid to get hit, and scores. So they go up 6-4 at half, and that was just a huge, huge momentum play for Yale that kind of kept their 2-goal cushion. And then coming out of the third quarter, they scored the first 3 goals to get it to 9-4. So basically, you know, in the game, they started the first half on a 3-0 run. They started the second half on a 3-0 run. That combined with all their good players, and, you know, the announcers kept on talking about if they, in years past, if they just had some good goalie play, who knows what they could have done. And Jack Starr had 9 saves in this game, but some of those 9 saves were point blank and just, you know, really solid saves. So, yeah, that's kind of my thoughts there about some of those other guys that not a lot of the casual. And to be quite honest, you know, that casual fan that you're talking about, if they're watching the game, they might not necessarily notice 1 goal and 3 assists from Reeves. They might notice more of a guy like, you know, Gaudette at 4 or something like that, but you know, you and I have seen Yale play probably 5-6 times this year, and I've seen Reeves do. He had 9 points in the semifinals, so I mean, it's like he's 4 points in the final. You know,
yeah,
they had a lot of guns. So,
hey, so yeah, definitely.
There's this one point play I want to bring up in the third quarter. Another kind of just keep on the trend of the momentum. And so it was 10-8 Yale. Duke just scored. It was like a skip pass to Quigley. So there's about a little over 3 minutes left in the third. And then there's a loose ball, right? The ball is in Yale's defensive end. So Duke is on offense, essentially. Star comes out of the net, and there's two Duke players right there, and it's like game on. Duke's coming up with this ball. They're going to go down. Could be 10-9. Anything can happen. But there was some call there where they called a loose ball hold on Duke. Now, I got to go back and watch that because I don't know. At first glance, it didn't necessarily look like a loose ball hold. But that break right there for Yale was huge because then they go down and score immediately. And, you know, we talk about those kind of momentum things. It's hard for a team that's trying to come back to overcome that type of stuff, whether it was a good call or not. It was just a big call. And when you look at the play develop before that hold, if it did happen, occurred, then you're like, any fan would be Duke's coming up with this ball. It's two guys, two athletic attackmen on Yale's goalie. But I just wanted to bring that one play up.
No, yeah, I'm glad you did. Yeah, that was. Well, hey, Jesse, just wanted to say thanks for all your good work this season. Thanks for being on our podcast. Always appreciate you joining us.
Yeah, it was great. I got to focus on some more of your Utah lacrosse players out there on the college rosters. Excited to see those guys play next season for sure.
Don't ever bother dancing. Just let that tip.